Good morning, everyone, and happy Thursday, and welcome to I Take Bravo Very Seriously with me, your host, Dana Mandel. Excited to be here today because we definitely have a lot to cover. I cannot believe we got two amazing trailers this week. We got the mid-season trailer for Vanderpump Rules, and we got like a real solid trailer for The Valley, so I'm definitely going to be recapping both of those. I've also got Summer House from last week to recap for you, as well as Vanderpump Rules, as well as the Vanderpump Rules after show, as well as Rachel Goes Rogue, as well as just all the other stuff going on. So I think we should just get right into the episode. What do you guys think? Let's do it.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
So the only real news we have this week is some updates on Rachel Lovis' lawsuit against Tom and Ariana. One of those updates was actually from TMZ. So TMZ, when this scandal had initially all come out, had published an article that said that sources who have seen the video say that there was just the two of them in the video, meaning Rachel and Tom. But that's all we got in terms of actual sources seeing the video, and that was one of the issues a lot of people had with the filing, in that Ariana has said that she did not send the video to anyone and she did not show the video to anyone, and Rachel was under the impression that there are possibly many people who have seen the video. And one of her arguments in her legal filing and what she said on Bethany's podcast, as well as a myriad of other places, was that people who have seen the video were able to describe it in quite a bit of detail, which made her believe that she had seen that other people had seen the video. But then I was confused about that because I'm like, she was just masturbating. So like, unless someone was able to determine the color of her eyeshadow, like, what other details could there be? So this TMZ video is wild because they have apparently spoken to sources who can actually describe what Rachel was wearing in the video. So I'm going to play that for you guys right now.
So in the lawsuit, Brendan, is she asking, is she suing for damages here? Does she want money, or she just wants to make sure that all copies of it are destroyed?
Right. She wants this video gone. That's the main thing that her attorneys want, is they want the video wiped, which I get it. And again, I've talked to people that have seen the video. I think it's being a little bit blown out of proportion. I'm told that she's not naked in the video. She's wearing very sexy lingerie. She does have a top on that reveals kind of her stomach. You don't see her upper chest.
So that was basically it, but I just thought that was kind of wild because I'm like, okay, like, even if you just watch the video, this TMZ video, which you can watch at the Bravo Investigator on my Instagram feed, you can see that the way that the reporter is even describing the video makes it appear that he has even seen the video himself. The idea of the lingerie I found kind of confusing, and I don't know, just because Rachel was in New York with Sheena for Watch What Happens Live on March the 1st. She wasn't there to meet anybody for sexy time, so why would she have lingerie? But then a friend of mine reminded me that men just consider sexy underwear lingerie, and so it may have been described as lingerie when it just could be underwear. And it's confusing the way that this is described as, like, being blown out of proportion and that she wasn't naked. And it's like, okay, but she was masturbating, so why are we just talking about her upper body? Like, why isn't there a description of the lower body? What's going on with the lower body? And obviously, as Rachel has purported, she was sent this video, or two videos, from Ariana. So she has seen them herself, and she probably, unfortunately, had to give them to her legal counsel, and they would be able to determine whether the contents of that video would constitute revenge porn. So obviously, there would have to be sexually explicit content. It can't be as tame, I guess, as TMZ is sort of making the video out to be, for it to be considered revenge porn, and her legal counsel would not make a filing of that if they did not find the contents within the video to be revenge, to meet the definition of revenge porn. But I just thought it was so interesting that now we're hearing that there are according to TMZ, right? But like, who's TMZ? I mean, they're not the most reliable news source in the world either, but I just thought it was crazy to hear an actual description of what she was wearing. The other update is that Sheena and Brock basically, I mean, a lot of people have talked about this on their podcasts and basically saying the same sort of thing, but Brock and Sheena brought to light something that maybe answers something that Rachel said in the lawsuit, maybe not, but basically one of the things that Rachel was purporting was that Ariana knew about the affair, and that back in December of 2022, she and Tom were getting handsy with each other, and Ariana said, or admonished them for being handsy, and said, save it for season 11. So here is what Brock and Sheena had to say to that.
Raquel was referring to when Ariana told Tom and Raquel to pull their head in and stop acting shady, because this looks sus, and you guys are looking sus, and I don't approve of this.
Yeah.
That's what that was. Yeah, she was calling out their behavior because it looked sus, and we took it as friends hanging out.
As did Ariana.
And that's what
that
she said.
That was what happened in December.
Exactly.
Okay, so I'm not actually sure that that clarifies anything. Because, okay, so Sheena and Brock saw Raquel and Tom acting sus, which I assume he means a suspect, acting weird, which is what Rachel said. And then Ariana told them to stop that because it was looking weird, but Sheena and Brock only took it as they were acting sus as friends, but Ariana also took it as them acting sus as friends, but then also felt that she needed to mention it. I honestly think we're going to need to get some more detail on this from Ariana and get her side of the story of what happened back in December 2022. I honestly thought the whole thing was like a misunderstanding when I read it in the filing, but I don't think that Brock and Sheena clarified it anymore either. It sounds like Tom and Raquel were getting handsy, and it's just not clear as to what Ariana thought of that, I guess. And I'm curious the context, what was going on that day, where they were. So that's basically the updates that we have on that. And then I guess there's this Kate Middleton thing, which I have, like, totally tried to stay out of, but, like, it's sort of hard not to get looped in. So I'm just gonna read you some posts from Hollaback Girl, because I thought her posts were so hilarious, and she found this funny way to really, Hollaback Cards, Danielle Peterson. She made these three posts that are so hilarious that are basically making it like Elle Woods being like, "Why, yes, Margot, I do know what happened." So she writes, "After Christmas last year, Kate stopped making public appearances. On January 17th, the Palace announced that she had undergone a planned abdominal surgery and would be hospitalized for 10 to 14 days, and she wouldn't participate in any public events until Easter on March 31st. On January 29th, the Palace said that Kate is returning home and making good progress, but there were no photos of her, which is odd considering they made this woman pose for photos immediately after having children multiple times. On February 5th, the Palace announced King Charles had cancer and had since been photographed publicly. After a month of radio silence, the theories were building on Twitter. No, we don't call it X. The Twitterverse started wondering, on overdrive, could Kate have gotten bad bangs or a BBL? Did she have a mental break and start working at the Ali Willy Wonka experience in Glasgow? Is she divorcing William after catching him cheating for what they assume wasn't the first time? Could it all be related to a serious health issue? People kept asking until the Palace responded on February 29th saying, please shut up. We said she'd be back by Easter. Shockingly, that strategy didn't work, so they tried again, and this time arranged for Backgrid to get a wildly grainy photo of Kate out for a car ride a week later, but this didn't work either. Instead of quelling fears and rumors, everyone thought it looked nothing like her, and no major UK news outlet published the photo. Was it a body double? Was she sicker than people thought? Everyone kept asking questions until the Palace said, JFC, here's a picture of her with her kids on UK Mother's Day taken by her alleged cheating, loving husband. But by the end of the day, newspapers had to take the image down because the picture was manipulated. So obviously the Palace decided we blame Kate for this because it's somehow all her fault anyways, and had she shared her Instagram account with William's post that she, as many amateur photographers do, was experimenting with editing. So now a day later, we have a new photo of her riding in a car with William. News outlets are starting to publish stories about William's longtime alleged mistress, and there is no further explanation into one of the most botched PR crises since Tom Sandoval's 23-year-old publicist let himself sabotage at the New York Times. Is Kate okay? Are William and Kate no more? Are we really supposed to believe that Princess of Wales edits her own photos and sends to the worldwide news publications? If so, will she someday improve her skills and teach a masterclass in Photoshop? Stay tuned." So I don't really have much more on this. I mean, all I can assume is, like, something went wrong with her surgery. She looks bad. And they don't want to tell that to the public, but I feel like, why don't you just tell that to the public? Just make a statement at this point and be like, she looks bad. She'll come out when she looks better. That would be my opinion, but I don't know. Anyways, you guys, why don't we get into the trailer for The Valley?
This is why my show is successful. This is
actually not your show. It's actually my show.
Okay, so we finally got a better trailer for The Valley, and honestly, you guys, this show looks so fire. Like, I know some people are like, oh, we didn't want this, or what is this? But honestly, I think it's gonna give us what Vanderpump Rules is lacking right now, which is true, true drama that really only true train wrecks like Jax and Kristen can truly bring. So I was really excited to see this come out. We see Janet Caperna and Jason Caperna. So I talked to you guys about them before. They are a couple on the show, and Janet is one of my favorite non-playable characters from Vanderpump Rules. She's been friends with Sheena for a long time. She was in her most recent wedding, and she's appeared throughout Vanderpump Rules episodes without, like, really speaking parts. But she's pregnant, and so they have a scene of her and her husband Jason going to prenatal yoga, and the teacher's like, Jason, you can get behind find her. And Jason's like, that's how we made the baby in the first place. And Janet's like, I knew you were going to say that. Sorry, it sounds like I'm making fun of them. But like, all right. And then we've got Kristen and Luke at the doctor trying to get pregnant. We see Jack saying, I have a beautiful bar. I have a beautiful son. I got money in the bank. And then you see Schwartz telling him, it's only a matter of time before you're living with me, divorced and miserable. And Jack laughs and he's like, no, don't say that. But like, it's so funny considering where we are now where, you know, basically he hangs out with Schwartz all the time. All he does is hang out at the bar. He's practically divorced and miserable because he's basically losing his wife. So it's funny how, you know, this is very much foreshadowing. We see Nia Sanchez crying at dinner. So Nia Sanchez is married to Danny Bucco. Nia is a previous pageant queen, and Danny is an actor. And we see her crying at dinner with everyone for, I guess, some dinner event that they're all at. And she's saying that everyone says her marriage is so special and it's frustrating because it feels out of her control. I don't know what the fuck the point of this couple is, quite frankly. I mean, they're very beautiful, and I know that in the previous trailer, Kristen had just described them as, like, the golden couple, like, the family that everybody sort of wants to live up to. But I think she's very surface level from what I can see. Like, everyone thinks your marriage is special, but it feels out of control because it's so special and it's so great and it's so perfect. Like, it just seems very bland. It seems like, I don't know, and she seemed kind of bland herself when she was on Kristen's podcast a while ago. So I don't really know what we're going to get from them so much. But again, not everybody's meant for reality TV, right? And a lot of these people are trying it out for the first time. We see Brittany saying that everybody has baby fever and it's through the roof. And then we see Jasmine Good holding a pregnancy test with Brittany. So Jasmine Good, as I mentioned, is also on the show. She was previously on Nick Viall's season of The Bachelor. She was on a season of Bachelor in Paradise. She's good friends with Sheena, and she actually used to work at Sur, and she was at Sheena's wedding in Mexico last summer as well. So she's currently dating someone named Melissa, so I don't know if this is a scene of, like, Jasmine possibly getting pregnant or Brittany taking a pregnancy test. I'm not really sure. Then we see a lot of Jax and Brittany fighting in this, and we see her saying, like, I live for my kid, and he's like, don't cry. And she's like, see, I can't even have an emotion. And he's like, you can't. And it's just like, okay, this is so what we expected of Jax and Brittany. Now, I want to remind everyone of something, which I mentioned in my podcast last week. We have barely ever actually gotten to see Jax and Brittany married, right? Because they got married in season 8 of Vanderpump Rules, and they were gone by season 9. So we saw very little of their marriage, if not a month or two, probably not even. So we've never actually, I mean, we've made assumptions as to what their married life would be like, but we actually haven't gotten to see it. So this is going to be our first chance to see it. And then there's a scene of Janet talking to Brittany, and Brittany saying, I don't feel like he's attracted to me. We don't have sex ever. And then there's a scene of Jack saying, it's hard to be married sometimes. And there's a shot of him talking to a pretty blonde. And then Janet, there's like a scene of her telling Jason that she saw a rumor online about Jack's cheating. So, I mean, we've been hearing rumors, obviously, that possibly one of the reasons Jax and Brittany broke up is that he cheated, and another rumor is possibly because he's not attracted to her, which are both things that he said and done to her before, so it doesn't seem so crazy, especially now that we're seeing this sort of play out here. Then there's this scene of Jax telling Michelle Lally. So Michelle Lally and Jesse Lally are another couple on the show. Jesse Lally is a real estate, a luxury real estate agent, and so is Michelle. And my sources, well, not even my sources, I mean, it's pretty obvious that Jesse and Michelle Lally have separated since the filming, or maybe during filming. So there's this scene where Jax is talking to Michelle Lally and saying, like, you were texting sexy pictures of yourself, but he doesn't say to who. And there's a scene of Jesse and Michelle talking, and Jesse says, like, do you even want this relationship to work? And Michelle says, I don't know. So the way they're making this look is they're trying to make it look like Michelle is, like, the seductress who is, like, takes pictures and is trying to, like, maybe entice other men. But I mean, I don't know anything about this couple, but from what I've seen of them and from the, from their social media and from the trailers and promos that we have seen, it does seem like Jesse is very, maybe so more so the aggressor in the relationship and just aggressive in general. Michelle is very, like, quiet and, like, sort of just goes towards his bidding, and maybe that sort of changes during the filming, because definitely something happens between them. Jax tells Brittany he doesn't know how to manage raising a kid, starting a family, and starting a business. And this is what I was saying all along. Like, I totally felt like when they were talking about opening this bar, I remember posting memes about the time, I mean, about how he doesn't realize how much work it is, and we've seen how it tore apart the relationships of Tom and Katie, of Tom and Ariana. And, you know, doing things like that do really tear apart your relationship. So look at him now, right? He's trying to manage all these things and he's struggling to do so. Yeah, I always said that this business was going to ruin their marriage. And then there's a scene of, sorry guys, Janet asking Jason, do you think everybody was just as happy as us before they had kids? And it's funny because, like, they're pregnant, they're just about to have a kid, and they're sort of in a different stage of their relationship than some of the marriages in the friend group, because a lot of those people already have kids, and they, from the trailer, seem pretty fucking miserable, right? So you see Janet just sort of being like, oh my god, right? And then we see Janet crying that Jason isn't acknowledging her feelings in a scene. I mean, Janet is pregnant during this time, and we've seen even from the previous trailer that she breaks down quite a bit, so I feel like a lot of that has to do with her pregnancy. There's a scene where, like, the whole cast is at the table, and Brittany's yelling, you're my husband, you're trying to make me look like a bad person, fuck you! And this is so reminiscent of, like, rotten hail, Jax, right? And it's just like, ugh, you know, of course he makes her look like a bad person. I can't wait to see these scenes play out, to see what he does to her, because this is just so very typical Jax and Brittany kind of shit. Then we see Kristen saying to Zach that loose lips sink ships. And she said, and Jasmine says to Michelle that, you know, she sent one of her little minis to spy on us. I'm not sure who they're talking about, but they're implying Kristen. And then we see Kristen crying, saying, like, I feel like I'm the only one who ever has to own my shit. And there's, like, a scene in the hallway of, I'm not sure where, but it's like Kristen, Luke, Michelle, and Jesse, and a cameraman. And Michelle is screaming at Kristen. She's like, you don't know what you've done to my marriage and my life and my daughter. It was like sharp, right? Like with these, with production coming in with like the boom, 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 like with the receipts, proof, timeline, screenshots. And Kristen says, your husband said on camera that he wants to divorce you. And so I think that what really happens here has a lot to do with this. So I'm guessing that a majority of the issue lies in the fact that Jax and Kristen know how to do reality TV very well, right? And their friends don't. So their friends are trying to keep some of their lives under wraps, and Kristen ends up exposing them or talking about things on camera that others don't want discussed. And she believes she's doing their job, but those friends end up believing it's violating their friendships. So that's what it looks like is happening here, where, like, it looks like Kristen and Michelle are completely battling it out over what is being said on camera. Then we have Zach saying that she is the Queen of England because she's dead to me. I'm not sure what she's talking about there, but I suspect Janet, based on the beef that's implied in their original trailer. And then we have Kristen saying, I didn't sign up for this all over again to go through this. I'd rather be on Vanderpump Rules. And I just love the relation back to it. I love the tie back to it. But what does seem really sad is, like, I hope that Jax and Kristen didn't, like, convince their friends to do this show and then it ruined everybody's lives, because I don't know if Michelle and Jesse Lally are together anymore. Kristen and Janet aren't friends anymore. I'm not sure if Kristen and Michelle are friends anymore. And Jax and Brittany are going through their separation. And I just wonder if all of this happened because of the show. And it would be really sad that it is. But guys, like, honestly, I think this is going to give us what we've been needing. I think it's going to give us that taste, that edge, that drama, that oomph, that thing that we need that Vanderpump just isn't giving us. And we gotta remember, as terrible as Jax is and as off as Kristen can be sometimes, these people know what they're doing and they are gonna put on a show. They're showmen, as Erica Jane would say, and I'm really jazzed for this. I can't wait till next week, March 19th, premiere of The Valley. Oh, actually, you guys, I forgot to mention that there is sort of one little update when it comes to Jax and Brittany, and that's just that pictures surfaced of Brittany filming moving out this week, and on When Reality Hits last week, Brittany and Jax did confirm that The Valley has picked up cameras for a couple of days. I'll just play that clip now.
We did pick up cameras again. You know, I think everybody should, like, notice about our show is that we filmed The Valley in July, let's see, July, August, and September. So we wrapped in September. So this has been like months and months and months ago. We picked back up to let everybody know what's going on with our lives now for a couple, you know, days. So I just want everybody to know, like, and keep that in mind with everything that's going on in our lives, that, you know, a lot has changed since we wrapped the show, but we're still so excited.
All right, well, obviously we're going to get a lot more of Jax and Brittany's separation when we see it on the show, but again, I'm still so confused as to, like, what's for the show and what's in real life, considering they're still doing their podcast together and they're filming all of this. It's just very confusing. But let's get into the Vanderpump Rules mid-season trailer.
He's a f***ing battered wife! Look at him!
Okay, so the Vanderpump Rules mid-season trailer also came out this week, which was awesome. The first half of the trailer was a little kind of nothing, but it really does start to pick up after that for the second half of the trailer. So we see Schwartz and Ariana talking to Dan, so Ariana's boyfriend, and, you know, Schwartz is defending Tom, saying he's not a bad person, he just did a trash thing, and Ariana says, a trash thing, and Schwartz says, a lot of things. We see Sheena recording one of her music videos. Schwartz is saying that he and Katie are in a good place right now, but they're dating the same girl, and Joe says that's fucked up. Schwartz has always had such a weird way of describing where he is with Katie whenever he's asked, like, in an interview. Like, you know, he'll say that they're in a good place, or even with Ariana, he'll say, like, we're good, we haven't spoken in years, but we're good, you know? So he's always describing people in this weird way, and so it's so funny for him to describe his relationship with Katie being good because they're dating the same girl. It's just bizarre. Then we have Katie saying Schwartz is going to wake up one day and realize she was the one that got away, and then we see Tom telling Katie that they should have a one-night stand. This is obviously just nonsense that they're throwing into the trailer, and this is so something that Schwartz would say when he's drunk. I mean, I can tell from what they're wearing that this is the finale party in San Diego for Kyle Chan's whiskey bar or whatever. Actually, the majority of this trailer is from that night, which I find kind of odd. I don't know if that means we're not going to be getting much for the rest of the season until the very, very final episode, but I just noticed that the majority of the outfits and the majority of the scenes shown in the trailer were from that episode. But anyway, so yeah, when Schwartz says things like that, like, oh, we should have a one-night stand, it's like when he gets nervous when he's drinking and he doesn't know what to say to someone he's uncomfortable with. So like at Sheena's wedding where he comes up to Katie where he's drunk and he's being ridiculous and he's like, can you shave my armpits for, can you trim me my armpit hair for me? Right, like that's what that is. So it's stupid that they even put this in there. Then we have Sandoval telling Schwartz that he would consider keeping the house if he had a roommate. And it sort of looks like Schwartz is about to throw up when Sandoval tells him that. It's also annoying because it's like, what do you mean you would consider keeping the house? You've considered keeping the house. You've never left the house, right? Like, Ariana wants you to leave the house. I just can't. Then we see Lala playing a game with all the girls, including Lisa, and saying that I have sperm up here, so it must have something to do with her IUI and her trying to get pregnant, so maybe some sort of, like, baby shower, but for her particular situation. We have Schwartz asking Dan if he's ever had a threesome. I'm just confused that there's even a scene with Schwartz and Dan. I just think that's so wild, but I also believe that Ariana said at the beginning that there isn't a lot of filming with Dan, that he only filmed a very, very little bit, so it seems like they're really throwing him into the trailer now and in the initial trailer as well for at the beginning of the season. Just, I don't know, just to add a lot of, you know, drive to be like, oh, we want to see more of Ariana's boyfriend. And we see Lala asking Daniel if Tom were to come up to him, like, what would he say? And Dan's like, I know what he's done. I just fucking love Dan. He is so hot with, like, his long hair and his muscles. He's just, like, such a fucking stand-up guy. And I cannot believe he's 40 years old with no kids. Like, he is, ugh. Two judgy girls should be putting him on for March Madness, I think. We see Schwartz saying to Ariana, we're all friends again. And Ariana's like, are we? And again, it's just Schwartz just, you know, trying to insert himself to just make things seem like everybody's all buddy-buddy and good when it's not. And again, this scene is clearly from the finale party. We see James telling Allie that he sees babies in their future. And then Allie saying, she says, I've never felt that. But the way she says it is very sort of like sharp and cutting, and I'm wondering if it's maybe from a different part of their conversation, as the way she said it, it's like, it's the way she says things when she's being like really firm, and I could imagine her being more soft in this moment, so I don't know if this is like real or not. Then they finally show that scene of Tom and Jax, which I think we're getting next week, because next week will be when VPR transitions into the Valley, and I believe that it'll be from this scene between Tom and Jax, which we've been waiting for. We see Tom saying, you've been relentlessly talking about me, and Jax is like, the whole world has. So that's going to be a good one to see. I'm actually really excited to see that fight, just because of the hypocrisy of it all, because Jax has literally done the same stuff. Then we have a scene of Sheena telling Brock, I don't think you and I are going to be together forever. So this is kind of shocking to say, because this is the kind of girl that would fight to the death for her marriage, and they're still going strong, so I'm sort of was like, where did this come from? And then my friend Brittany, she's on this app called Discord, and I'm not really quite sure what it is. It might be like a music thing. And she has Sheena on there. And she was actually chatting with Sheena yesterday, which was wild. Sheena was like, oh, are people talking about the trailer? Yeah, what I meant by that was, I don't think we're going to be together forever because I think one of us is going to die young. Which, I mean, Sheena's been on this show a long time. So she knows how to do a good sound bite, do a good sound clip. But okay, if that's why you said it, that sort of makes a little more sense. And then I guess we'll get more context into that when the show sort of airs. Like, I don't know if she believes she's going to be dying young, or she believes that he's going to die young. So I'm very curious to get more on that. But apparently it's not because she believes that they're going to get divorced. It's she believes one of them is going to die before the other. Then we see the beach scene and Sandoval saying, like, according to your rules, Ariana, and Ariana saying, don't speak to me, don't speak to me. And then we see the finale party and Schwartz says that he brings Joe over to talk to Katie, and Katie's like, I don't want to make peace with her, like, I don't care. Again, this also just feels very weird and produced. At this point in time, like, at the point that we're at right now, we haven't really gotten much of Joe, which is fine. And so it's sort of hard to picture her needing to come in at that point and have a conversation with Katie when we have not even seen her interact with Katie whatsoever. So I don't know. I just don't know how big of the scene or the finale or even the show that argument, I guess, is going to be. Then we see Tom following Ariana and being like, wait a second. And so this is now the second time that Tom is now trying to follow Ariana around. And do we not remember when season 10 ended and she said to him, any last words before we speak again? Before we never speak again, sorry. And now there's two times here, the beach scene and then this finale party where he's trying to follow her around and get her to talk to him. Very annoying. And then we see Ariana talking to a producer, and I don't know if she's talking to the producer about Tom or she's saying it to the producer, but she's saying either he or you want 30 seconds with the audience, and either he or you won't give a fuck if I died in a fucking ditch. So I don't know if she's saying to them, like, I'm not going to give you this 30-second conversation with Tom who doesn't give a shit about me. I wouldn't care if I died in a ditch. Or she's saying to the producer, like, I'm not going to give you guys that 30 seconds of whatever you want for the audience because you guys wouldn't care if I died in a ditch. So I'm not quite sure about that. But I remember that scene being filmed, and I remember that production was trying to get her to talk to Tom and that she was very, very frustrated about it and that she kept trying to leave the party. She doesn't need to fucking talk to Tom, and I can't believe production was continuously, even at that point, still trying to get her to. It's not necessary. And then we see Sandoval telling Sheena and Lala that Ariana's talked shit about all of them, and this is exactly just what Sandoval does, right? Like, he's just like, okay, but not me, but look at what Ariana does to all of you, right? And it's just gross of him to try to destroy their friendships and not keep anything confidential that he had with Ariana, like, sort of under wraps, you know? Then we have a scene of Sheena, like, yelling at Sandoval, saying, like, because of this, I thought that I've had fucked up thoughts about Brock and Lala, and could this happen between them? And then she yells at Tom, and she's like, you did that! And that is so true, and just the way that she fires at him, you know, I just love that she just sort of came at him like that, but I also love what she was saying, right? Because this did affect other people in the sense that it affected people's ability to be able to trust their friend group. I mean, James was sort of the same thinking, right? He was like, if my best friend Tom could do this, how can I trust anybody? And now Sheena's feeling like, you know, I'm the type of person who trusted Rachel in bed with me and my husband, and I wouldn't have thought anything of it. And her and Lala are so, so incredibly close, and they have that sort of family dynamic where they're just sort of all one big family together. But because of what happened with Tom and Raquel, it put the doubt or the seed in other people's minds of like, wait, if those two best friends of mine could do that to me, could these two best friends of mine do that to me? Could my husband do that to me? And yeah, it is Tom that put those thoughts in her head. So I absolutely love that. So yeah, like I said, it seems like a majority of this trailer is from that finale party. It also seems like they stopped trying to sort of push that Sheena and Schwartz storyline down our throats. So I hope we've forgotten about that. Like, I really don't care. And I still hope we get that, like, my house and my children scene with Ariana and Tom, which wasn't in this trailer, but what was in the initial one. Like, I don't think she needs to talk to him, but if there is a scene where she does, I would love to see her bitch them out. So that's it for the Vanderpump Rules mid-season trailer. So yeah, we've had a slow start, but it looks like we're on the up and up. It looks like the show is going to get better for the second half.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
Okay, so let's get into our Summer House recap of episode 3. So we open up with Carl and Lindsay fighting from the night before, where she had accused him of being cocaine Carl, as we all recall. She is now sober, but she is literally still questioning Carl. So it was like one thing to be like, where we could maybe say, okay, she was really drunk, she didn't know what she was saying, but she is now still in the morning pestering him and saying, so she looks at her phone and she's like, what did you mean when you texted me last night and said I'm sober right now? And he's like, I am sober. So she basically just keeps pushing him and he gets mad and she's like, whoa, why are you yelling? And he's like, I'm allowed to be upset. And she's like rolling her eyes and like he's being unreasonable. And it's just like such insane nonsense. So then Carl goes downstairs and he sees Gabby in the kitchen and he tells her the same story. Yeah, that we heard that Lindsay was worried about going into the car with the guys. And he said, you know, like, don't worry, it won't be a problem. And then she said, you're attacking me. And he said, like, I wasn't attacking her. I was very calm. And it's interesting that I chose to talk to Gabby about this because she's Lindsay's friend, but she also seems like hella reasonable when, like, for example, like when she was talking with Lindsay the night before, because they had gone home together from the bar and Lindsay's being like, he's cocaine Carl. And Gabby was like, I mean, that he seems like a sober man to me. So she is definitely the most reasonable friend. And then on the other hand, we have Lindsay talking to Danielle in the kitchen. And she says that she tried to approach Carl like nicely this morning and he was so defensive and cutting her off. And she was just trying to tell him how she felt. The fact that they aren't even on the same page about what happened 10 minutes ago is like frightening. And I'll keep repeating this for the people in the back. Like, I cannot believe that we are getting this level of issues with them so early on in the season, because as I mentioned last week, and as I've mentioned in previous episodes, or, you know, whenever I was recapping anything else having to do with Summer House, that Lindsay has said on multiple podcasts and interviews that her and Carl were fine that summer, and that they only really had issues towards the last couple of weeks of the summer, which is clearly not true, as we are in, like, the second weekend of the summer, right? So then we have Lindsay telling the camera that, you know, like, fun Carl, and by fun Carl she means like cocaine Carl, he was dismissive and aggressive, and she says that she has PTSD from that Carl. Then the producer asks Lindsay, was there any point where you thought that Carl was not sober? And she says no. And so the producer says, so why did you feel like you wanted to tell him you're not acting sober, you're not sober? And Lindsay says that she should have used more delicate words than that, but she was so taken aback by his aggressiveness in that moment. And she goes on about how, like, he was treating her like very startling and very much like the old Carl, but you'll notice she doesn't actually apologize here. All she says, and she has said this like more recently as well, that she apologizes for the language that she uses, but not for saying it at all. Now, it's one thing if you genuinely believe your partner to not be sober, and that's why you asked, right? But she's actually saying to the producer here, there was no point at which she actually thought that. So a change of words wouldn't really have changed anything, right? Like, you used those words because to hurt him, right? It's actually just so incredibly fucked up that she would decide to attack him for his sobriety, which is something he's so proud of and so important in his life, and something that you were supposed to support him on as his partner, and use it to attack him as something against him just because he was acting sus, if we want to use Brock's words. But he wasn't acting not sober, because like you said, you never at any point thought he wasn't actually not sober, right? So it's, wow, like, wow, it's just wild. So let me see Kyle and Carl talking outside, and Kyle is like, can I be honest with you? Like, we really needed some witnesses for that to happen. And so it sort of seems like Kyle's saying here, like, you know, I've seen a bunch of this shit before, but like, we finally got someone else to see it. And it's like, yes, but I'm also annoyed that there were not cameras in this car. Like, this is a surveillance show. They often have cameras in the car. Why were there no cameras in this car? Like, why was this one time where there were no cameras in the car? And Kyle says that what really bothered him was that she was like, what do you want? And Kyle's like, she never takes accountability. And Carl's like, yeah, but I don't want to blame her. And Kyle cuts him off and he's like, no, Carl, like, last night was unacceptable. And it's so true. And Kyle's like, you know, I'm just worried about the wedding. And Carl's like, he's just more sad than anything. And this is just sad because, like, I think that Kyle has always been such a good friend to Carl and he really is trying to support him here, but it's a delicate balance when you're talking about somebody's fiance. And it's just sad to watch Carl sort of continue to try to defend her when in this situation there is no defense. And that's what Kyle is, like, saying, right? He's like, no, man, like, no, this is not acceptable behavior. So then they decide to go to the beach and have a beach day. Gabby tells the camera that the real problem is that Lindsay came into this house with no friends but her, and she was trying to articulate that, but that would have been the end of it until Lindsay threw out some accusations that had no basis whatsoever, and now it's a shitstorm. I just love how Gabby can sort of play the middleman in this sense. Then we see Danielle and Carl playing catch at the beach, and Carl is saying that he's been in transition with his career for the last year, and he doesn't want to rush into that next step. And he says it's nice not to have the pressure of work. I'm sure it is Carl. I'm sure it's really nice to get up at noon every day. Then we see Paige telling Amanda that Jesse had tried to put his hand on her knee at the club last night, and she was immediately like, you can't do that. And she says she's not like, it's not like her to call something like that out in the moment. And she says that Craig isn't a jealous person, but he's had his moments, and she wants him to get along with everyone she lives with. But at the same time, like, if a girl touched his leg, she would be on a flight to Charleston. And Paige is like, she's not, like, uncomfortable, but she's uncomfortable for him. And again, I just, like, we don't know this Jesse Solomon very well, but he has blatantly said, like, I will flirt with women who have boyfriends. And I just, that's not cute to me. Like, I don't think that's cute. And I think it's really not okay that he put his hand on Paige's leg and even put her in the position where she had to say, like, you can't do that. You know what I mean? And then we see Lindsay and Danielle having a sit-down talk at the beach, and Lindsay is sort of talking to her about Carl, and she says that Carl's been trying to figure out, like, this work thing for, like, a year. Lindsay's saying that she's an influencer now and she makes good money, but since Carl left Loverboy, they have sort of been trying to figure out what he's into. She says that he wanted to start a podcast, so they bought podcast equipment, and then he talks about TV production, he talks about motivational speaking, he hired a career coach for 6 months, which was 20 grand. And I'm just sort of thinking, like, shouldn't this all have been figured out before you guys were getting married? Like, I totally get wanting a guy with a strong work ethic. Like, that is very important to me as well. But I also get it taking a long time to figure it out. Like, they don't teach all the different career paths. I mean, we don't even know half of the career paths that exist when we're in school, right? I mean, it's, I can totally understand why at this stage of life he still could be trying to figure it out. But I also can't imagine marrying someone who doesn't, like, know what they want to be when they grow up. And she also makes this, Lindsay, she makes this snarky comment about the motivational speaker thing. She's like, okay, might need to figure out a few things there first, but sure. And this is just so not supportive, and it's, like, condescending to your partner's intelligence and even, like, his worth. But I feel like on the job thing, yeah, like, it's time to figure it out. I mean, I'm in a different situation. They're on TV. I'm sure they're financially, like, fine enough. But personally, like, I would hold off the wedding until that part was figured out as well, especially if they want to start a family and they want to do all of this stuff. He does eventually need to have it figured out. And I do believe, like, a year is a pretty long time. And it sort of has to come to a point where, again, they're in a different position than me, where, like, if it were someone like me, it would have to come to a point where my partner would have to get a job to help support our family, because that is the right thing to do. It shouldn't be all on me. Again, they could be in a different sort of financial situation, given that Lindsay's an influencer, they're on TV and what have you. But, you know, if they do have kids, there should be a point in time where Carl is contributing to the family, obviously. So, you know, Danielle is just sort of asking Lindsay if she really wants her to come to the wedding. And Lindsay's like, yeah, of course. And so their boundary setting seems to be working and they're getting along quite nicely. And it doesn't really seem like forced or awkward. So then we finally see Carl asking Lindsay to go talk because they still haven't spoken all day since the morning when they were still fighting. And he tells her that he loves her and he's sorry and he wants to be her support, which is what he was trying to do the night before. And Lindsay says that in those moments, she doesn't understand where his mood even comes from because he was being aggressive and mean and rude. And Carl said that she made hurtful comments and it felt like she was accusing him of not being sober, but she wasn't sober. And Lindsay explains that she has PTSD from old Carl, and that's just sort of where she felt that came out last night. And she was just trying to sort of figure out where that came from and why. And that's why I still feel like we really need to see this conversation in the car, because the way that she's describing him isn't a way that I can even picture Carl acting, because he's always so calm and cavalier. And even when they show us, like, these throwback scenes of cocaine Carl, like, he really doesn't seem aggressive or mean or that bad at all. So again, I just really feel like we need to say that or to see that. And so she's explaining to Carl that she just has, like, this PTSD from old Carl, and it's just, like, hard for her. So anyways, they make up, and then some of the house goes out to dinner, and then Sierra and West are, like, totally flirting up a storm and getting along so well. And the table is talking about how Carl and Lindsay fight, and Carl is sort of trying to downplay it to the group. And then Sierra just sort of comes right out with it. I never knew that she just had such, like, balls just to sort of make this, like, statement. But she's just like, you know, if you plan, like, she asks him, like, how he plans to be with someone who drinks and has a tendency to be obnoxious and rude when she's drinking. And Carl says, well, she's gotten better in years past, and we go to therapy, and, you know, we always come back together. But I was just so proud of Sierra for just, like, flat out just asking that, because not only is it difficult that Lindsay drinks, it's that she becomes a different person when she drinks, which is sort of the opposite of what a sober person typically wants to surround themselves with. So then Kyle and some of the others are staying home, and Kyle is supposed to be taking care of the dogs, and then he ends up losing one. And Paige is like, how can he sit there and say Amanda isn't ready for kids when he just ran out the back door looking for one of his? And then Lindsay and Gabby and Paige, they're all at home and they're chatting. And then Lindsay throws Danielle under the bus and tells Paige that it was actually Danielle that told the press that Craig got kicked out of Kyle and Amanda's wedding. And Paige was always certain that it was Lindsay. So it doesn't seem like Lindsay cares too much about repairing her friendship with Danielle, as Danielle is with Lindsay. Like, it seemed like they were totally good on the beach, and it seemed like you couldn't even tell that they were having any issues, but it also doesn't seem like Lindsay values her relationship enough with Danielle, because she literally just threw her under the bus. But Paige doesn't seem like she's going to make a big deal out of it, because she says, like, she's not going to go yell at Danielle, like, she doesn't care. But Paige tells the camera that it seems like Lindsay is trying to get her and the girls to turn against Danielle. Which, again, not good, Lindsay, not good. So the next morning, they all head back to the city, and Wes and Sierra go on a date, and it's, like, fucking magical. Like, I just love seeing her like this. You know, she said she's a little worried because of his age. He's 28, but he really does seem sweet, and she really just needs, like, a good man. And this, like, truckload of deadbeats we've seen her with is just not it. Like, this woman is literally a gorgeous model, and she shouldn't have to wade through NYC trash. It's literally insane. But he is wearing a black collared mesh button-down shirt with his nipples showing. So that was, it was a choice. It was definitely a choice. But Sierra said she liked it, so I guess, I mean, girl, as long as you like it. And then we have our final scene where Lindsay meets Carl at a sober bar. And so the two of them are basically talking about, like, his future and what he wants to do. And he tells her he thinks he's figured it out and he wants to open a sober sports bar. And Lindsay ends up vetoing this. And she says she doesn't want to do a brick and mortar because she's done all of this work where she worked in hospitality when she was a publicist. And she's just like, no, I'm not doing it. So I'm actually not really sure what that means. Maybe somebody who could speak more to the brick and mortar of it all could sort of advise me, send me some DMs. But I think it's more the point that she's just not supportive when he seems really super, like, excited about the idea. And Lindsay said, like, she's so attracted to the drive and the determination. And I agree. I am so the same way. But she's also vetoing his ideas of the things that he wants to do. So she's sort of providing, like, a stalemate situation, right? I mean, anyways, we're totally going to see where this goes, but we know where this goes. We know their relationship just continues to nosedive as the summer goes on. But it's just going to be interesting to sort of watch that play out. And that's it for our recap of Summer House.
Summer should be fun. Mena, not fun.
Okay, so let's get into Rachel Goes Rogue, because Rachel went rogue this week. She skipped a week. I assume it was because of the lawsuit and all of the backlash that she got, but she decided to release just a very quick episode, so I'm just going to go through the main points with you guys. She says, it's mostly against Lisa, and she has quite a bit to say about Lisa. She says that Lisa Vanderpump thinks that she should have come back to the show because it would have been good for ratings. So she thinks that Lisa's motive for trying to get Rachel to come back was purely financial and not out of a concern for her. She notes that on this upcoming week's episode of Vanderpump Rules, which we're going to talk about next, that Lisa talks to Sandoval about speaking to her, and that is true, that she did speak with Lisa after she found out that Lisa gave Graham to James, but she was saying that Lisa wasn't concerned about Graham at all, and she kept flipping the conversation to her coming back to the show, and Rachel's like, no, like, I don't want to be with Tom. He told me lying is a way of life, but it's not a way of my life. And Lisa was like, oh, that's good. Why don't you come on and tell me that on camera? And that's just so hilarious. I could so picture Lisa being like, oh, that's a good soundbite. Why don't you come over and buy me flowers and apologize to me and say that on camera? So she was very attentive to what Rachel's emotions and feelings were in the conversation when she was talking about Tom, but not when she was talking about Graham. She didn't really seem concerned about Graham at all. She said she thinks it's a double standard when Lisa is supporting Tom, and yet Rachel's being dismissed and her experience is being dismissed because she actually went to therapy to get help. She talks about how Tom uses Rachel and I and we a lot in the show, and she suspects that'll change now that, you know, he realizes that they're not going to be together. And she says that Lisa doesn't refer to them as having the same experiences. She said something like, I don't know what Rachel needs to move on from. Yet the whole season, according to Rachel, so Rachel's saying, like, the whole season is about the cast moving on from Scandoval, yet Lisa's making comments to the press like, I don't know what Rachel needs to move on from. She thinks that some of the cast can't fathom a life outside of Vanderpump Rules, and that's totally true. I mean, we've seen that with Tom in the New York Times article, and we've seen even Nick Vile say that about Tom, where he just, his entire life is the show and he can't picture his life outside of the show. Rachel says that she still has her kinesiology degree and she's interested in psychology and she's young and she has time to figure out what she wants to do. She says that she can't talk much about the lawsuit as it's ongoing, but she would like to have her lawyers on at some point. She said that Lisa was asked for comment on the lawsuit. So you guys will remember this from last week. So Lisa was asked for comment by like a TMZ reporter. And she said, oh, it's ridiculous. If you don't want your porn shared, don't send it to your best friend's boyfriend. And then, like, I had even posted that, and I was just like, does Lisa not, like, know the basic tenets of Scandoval? Does she not know that, like, that's not what happened? And, like, then it's clarified that the FaceTime video was recorded without her knowledge or consent, and she didn't know it existed until it was sent to her, and that is what the lawsuit is about, which is what Rachel's clarifying. She says that she actually knows that it was... So, this is kind of interesting. So, she believes that Lisa wasn't mistaken when she was speaking with TMZ, that she actually knew exactly what she was doing by sort of changing the narrative and making it seem like, you know, oh, well, Rachel was the one who sent the video without consent, and that she's actually spreading that propaganda and that it's making people think that that's the true story. And then that's what becomes the soundbite, and that's what becomes what people think the lawsuit is about. So she says it's disappointing that Lisa's trying to push out that narrative that isn't true. And she says it's heartbreaking when you look up to someone like that that lets you down. So she fully thinks that, you know, Lisa did that on purpose to try to push out like a different story and knew what she was doing. She says it's one thing to support your male cast members and let the female cast member take the fall. I keep going back and forth on this when it comes to what I believe Lisa should have done for Rachel versus Tom. Again, like, I totally understand where Rachel's coming from. Like, she even mentions in this podcast episode that she, you know, she worked for Lisa at Sir, she served Lisa at Sir, she worked for Vanderpump Dog. So it's not like she was no one to Lisa. And definitely Lisa likes the men better and treats the men better. That is definitely the truth. However, I think when it comes to Rachel, I think the fact that, one, she did go and get mental health therapy was amazing for her. And because of that, I just don't know what Lisa could have done for her in addition to that. That would have even been appropriate, quite frankly. And yes, she's given Tom support that she shouldn't be giving him, but also at the same time, and this is something I mentioned in a previous episode, if everybody is so concerned, including Lisa, about Tom's mental health, why wasn't something done about that, right? Like, if you think about it, was Tom really getting support from Lisa besides, like, verbal support, right, which isn't really anything? She wasn't getting him mental health support, right? All she was doing was asking Sheena and Lala to ease up on him and putting his, you know, suicidal ideation on them, basically, which is completely fucked up. If Lisa was truly supporting Tom and not Rachel, then she should have been getting him support. But she actually wasn't. So in actuality, I don't think she was supporting either of them, if you really think about it. But she definitely, definitely, definitely is a male sympathizer. That's for sure.
And that's God, what you
why
go
is it
on?
About the damn pasta? Get over the damn pasta. Read between the f***ing lines. It ain't about the pasta. It's not about the pasta. Not about the pasta.
Okay, let's get into our Vanderpump Rules recap, and then we've got the after show. So we've got Tom telling Anne that there was some fighting on the trip, but there was some resolution. And Anne is looking so cute. She's wearing like this cute pink dress because she's going to the Barbie movie and she didn't know that Tom would be coming home. So this is after the trip to Tahoe. And then we have Sheena going to talk to Lisa at Lisa's house, and she's talking about how it's hard when she tries to talk to Ariana about Sandoval. And Lisa's like, you know, why don't you just like really just try talking to her about it? And she's like, she shuts me down. And Sheena's saying like, she feels like she's done everything to be ride or die for Ariana, but is it still not enough? And she's like, it can't be about me. It's only about Ariana. And then she tells Lisa that she actually found out that Ariana got Dancing from the Stars from Ariana's boyfriend, Dan. And Lisa looks like someone just committed a murder. She like covers her face. She's like, oh my goodness. I cannot, oh my God. And, you know, she's like, Lisa's like, you know, when I did Dancing with the Stars, I knew that that's something you wanted. And Shane's like, yeah, I mean, I even started taking dance classes this year in case I got it. Like, what? Like, why would you think you would get it? Why does that have anything to do with Ariana? And honestly, I don't think that she could hack it. And that's really nothing against her. But like, look at those dance moves that Ariana had to perform. It is a very, very complex show to make it all the way to the end. You have to be like pretty fucking amazing. And Sheena doesn't have a ton of dance experience except for like, can you freak, bitch, right? So, you know, I really don't think she'd make it very far. She'd probably twist her ankle within the first day, cry, and that would sort of be the end of it. But regardless, like, I just think it's so funny that she decided to take dance classes just in case she got the call. I don't know. And then she has the nerve, the fucking nerve, to say to the camera, Ariana's come a really long way from being my backup dancer. Sheena Marie Shay. Like, what? I mean, at this point, it's going to be really hard for her and Ariana to come back because they have always stayed friends. And despite all of this, we can see all of this tension that's been going on throughout this season. Then we saw BravoCon and a myriad of like other things. And now that Ariana's starting to see these things and is starting to see these confessionals, I think it's really going to change the dynamic of their friendship. I mean, it has already, quite frankly. Sheena tells Lisa that, you know, she's tried to talk to Ariana, and Lisa's like, okay, but do you want to be friends with someone who does want to hear you out? And then she says she's going to be seeing Ariana at Ali's soon. And Lisa just says she wants Sheena to stop basically flip-flopping and saying, like, you hurt my feelings. But, you know, it's just really not that easy these days with Ariana. So then we see Ariana and Lala going for coffee, and they're talking about the Tahoe trip. And Lala's like, you know, everyone came for Sheena for that photo of, you know, so we all know the photo where the group posted a photo for a friend, or sorry, a fan's birthday, and Sheena was standing next to Sandoval in the photo, and the internet freaked out saying she was a bad friend and this and this and that. So Lala's basically telling her, you know, it was so bad for her. And then she says to Ariana, you know, you didn't come to her defense at all. And Ariana's like, what, I'm not gonna like make a post and like make it like a headline. And Lala's like, really though, for your friend though? And Ariana's like, yeah, I guess I could. And Lala's like, you know, Sheena lost two friends for you and got a restraining order for you. And like the way she frames it like that, you know, that is true. But I do love how Lala's just like so no bullshit right now. And she's like not afraid of Ariana at all. Nor should she be, right? But like these are both queen bee type of women. And Lala is just like not coming at it from a soft place. She's being very like, you know, matter of fact. And I think she's being like that because she's seeing how much her friend Sheena is going through. So she's like riding for Sheena so hard. And I love that for Sheena because she usually sort of stands alone. But I don't think Ariana, quite frankly, needed to make a post to defend Sheena for that photo. It also shows how much the cast puts Ariana on the pedestal as a queen bee, just as much as everyone else, by giving her the authority to speak on Sheena's behalf and basically ask the world to calm down as if Ariana's God, which is what Lala argues about later on this season, where she's like, I've never seen someone cheat on and become God, but you're making her God by giving her that authority to be able to, you know, God is going to make a post now and make everything okay, right? She said that, you know, she's not the one to come to with the sympathy train for Sandoval, right? And she's not, right? Like, Ariana, she doesn't want to hear it. And this is what I was saying last week, too. I think that Sheena's feelings about Tom are valid, but I don't think Ariana is her audience. And Ariana also mentions that she lost two friends, too, you know, and she did. That's 100% true as well. And Ariana makes a very excellent point, and this is what we all knew going into the season. She said that Sandoval knows that Sheena is the easiest to crack, and then he can make his way back into the group, and then end up pushing Ariana out, right? Like, that's totally what he's going to try to do, and Sheena is, you know, the first key to the puzzle. She's the easiest to crack. So then we see a scene of Sheena, Lala, Katie, and Christina Kelly going for drinks. I love me some Christina Kelly. She didn't bring her baby, but that's okay. So then Sheena's talking about how the Tahoe trip and how Sandoval showed some genuine tears. And Christina asks Sheena if she thinks that Tom, like, cares more about his friendship with her than about his relationship with Ariana. And Sheena says yes. That's because he was so unhappy with her for so long. And a lot of people are like, wow, I cannot believe the selfishness of Sheena to say that. And I'm not arguing that. It is extremely, like, self-involved to say that. But it's also probably true, right? I mean, Sandoval was very clear about how much he did not care about Ariana looking at the actions that he did. So I feel like at this point, I think he does care more about Sheena than he does about his relationship with Ariana. And not because he cares about Sheena as a friend, but because he cares about her for the show. And, you know, that's sort of what I think we're going to get there. So then they talk about, like, why people stay in relationships. And then Katie and Sheena and Lala are sort of all talking about, like, Jax. And I guess this is sort of how they're leading it back into, you know, the Valley and how they hear stories about him running around town. And Katie asks Sheena, like, why she misses this kind of person and wants him in her life when she's talking about Sandoval. And Sheena's like, you know, he's the person he was before all of this. Yes, she does miss that person. And she gives the example of, like, the upfronts in 2012 when the show first became a thing and he was the only one who would stand next to her. And Katie's like, yeah, yeah, okay, but that was forever ago. And Lala jumps in and she's like, okay, that's not important to you, but it is to her. And Katie's like, yeah, but I don't hold on to these little, like, things from a long time ago. And Lala's like, okay, that's you, right? So we're already starting to see this little bit of a rift between Katie and Lala. And I thought it was going to be, again, because of Schwartz, because that's what we heard, but it seems more so, and we'll see more of this later on in the episode, that it might have something to do with Lala sticking up for Sheena when it comes to Sandoval, and Katie just not understanding that. So then Katie says that she wishes that Sheena would just, you know, wake the fuck up, cut ties with him, and be a good friend to Ariana. She says this to the camera, not to Sheena, obviously. And Katie says she will, like, jump off this roof if they keep talking about Sandoval. And, but honestly, like, Katie actually brought him up, to be quite honest. But then she gets, like, really tearful, and she's like, that man has never offered me an apology, he interfered in my marriage, he made me out to be a monster, and the fact that anyone is having trouble getting over this trash bag of a human is unfathomable. And I totally feel for Katie here. Sandoval has always treated Katie like absolute shit, and he owes her an apology, 100%. But the relationship that Katie has always had with Sandoval is very different from the relationship that Sheena had with Sandoval. Katie and Sandoval were only in each other's lives because of Schwartz, while Sandoval and Sheena were genuinely friends. So it is very easy for Katie to be like, great, cut you out, no big deal, he wasn't really in her life anyways. But Sandoval is in Sheena's, right? So it's a little bit different there, but, you know, just to see it from Katie's perspective just really shows. And the thing is with Sheena, though, is that she always looks at things and people in terms of whether they did something to her specifically, right? Like, that person hasn't done something to me, and I don't know if I can hate that person because they didn't do anything to me. But here's the thing. It doesn't really matter. Because if you have someone in your life who treated your friends like trash, then they're capable of treating you like trash. And I think she needs to start looking at it like that. Like, if I'm friends with someone who is constantly talking shit to me about everyone else in our lives, she's probably also doing that about me, right? And you have to think about things like that when you're in friendships with people. It's not always going to be directly impacted at you. You need to look at the way that they treat other people as well for you to determine whether you want to be friends with someone like that, right? I mean, I've cut people out of my life for the way that they've treated other people, and I think that's totally fair and valid because it one, questions their morality, and two, it makes you question whether they can do that to you. So while I do believe that Sheena's feelings are very valid in terms of feeling differently about Sandoval than Katie does, for example, and for the fact that she's struggling so much to get through this because she felt that they had a real friendship, I also feel like she just sort of needs to look at things from a different perspective when it comes to the way that he has treated those around you, right? Because part of who you are as a friend is surrounding yourself with people that your friends feel safe with, basically, right? So then we see Tom Sandoval meeting with Lisa at Tom Tom, and they're talking about Raquel, and he says that he wants to have some sort of relationship with her. And Lisa said, I didn't want to tell you this, but I spoke with her at length. And he looks shocked, right? Because at this point in time, they haven't spoken in like a month, but for some reason, he still feels like something is still going to happen with them. And then she says that Rachel told her that she wasn't comfortable with lying, and that Sandoval told her that life is lying, which is exactly what she had said in Rachel Goes Rogue. So it's funny that these two episodes basically complemented each other because they sort of just, you know, tie right in, despite Sandoval being like, I never said that to her. And Lisa's like, well, that's what she said to me. She said, you said life is lying. And that does sound like something Sandoval would say considering how he lives his life. And then Tom says that the last time he talked to Rachel, she said that when people get done with this program, they stay there. And he said, the longer you stay there, it's going to be harder for you to face the world. And then she got mad at him. He says that he's just worried about her and wants to give her a hug and make sure she's okay. And Lisa, like, sort of encouraged Tom to reach out to him. Sorry. Lisa encourages Tom to reach out to Rachel. And then he's like, she blocked me. And he's like, and then Lisa's like, oh, she blocked you. Well, it's over then. And then Lisa told the camera that Rachel actually told her that she felt manipulated by Tom and that she didn't love him anymore. So, I mean, we obviously got a lot more information about what was going on behind the scenes in terms of Rachel, because she was telling us about all the terrible things that Sandoval was actually saying to her while she was at the Meadows. She was feeling unsafe to leave the Meadows, like, you know, unsafe to herself. And he was calling her selfish and demanding that she leave. I mean, he did a myriad of things while she was in there, and he just doesn't seem to realize that any of those things were a big deal. And I think that's because he had lied to her so many times, and he had treated her like shit so many times and made her do so many shitty things that he just figured, you know, this is how I treat her and just one more, right? But again, I really think that place allowed her to have that perspective separate from him, and allowed her to see the world separate from him and the lies separate from him. And that's what really made her come around. But it's wild that he's sitting there just being like, I'm so worried about her. I want to give her a hug. She's fine, man. You're the one who's not fine. You're the one who's trying to get your friend group back. She has her family support. She's getting the mental health support. Like, you don't need to be worried about her. Like, she's staying away from you to keep safe, right? Like, people would need to be worried about her if she did talk to you. He just doesn't get that. He just doesn't fucking get that. So then we have Lisa coming to the Give Them Lala offices, which I think is funny because usually Lisa makes people come to her homes and her restaurants and her things. But I guess we're running out of reasons to have Lisa be on this show. So she comes to Give Them Lala, and Lala's telling her that she's looking to rebrand and she's not going to be doing like Give Them Lala anymore. So I'm not sure exactly what that means, but she basically says that she's changed and grown and she's become more reserved, and her brand needs to reflect that. So I don't know if that's more about like the clothing or the makeup or even the podcast, because all of those things are called Give Them Lala. So she didn't really even explain it on her podcast today. She said she's sort of keeping the rebrand under wraps a little bit. So I guess we'll find out more about what she means by that. She talks to Lisa about wanting a sperm donor. And as we know, she is currently pregnant now, with a baby that she got through IUI, got pregnant through IUI. But at the time in the episode, she's talking about wanting a sperm donor and how she doesn't want a baby daddy. And I just love how confident she is about this, because Lisa was a little bit sort of trying to shut her down and being like, you know, well, why don't you just wait? And no, like, she's just like, I don't want to wait to meet a man. And she cries and talking about like having to share this baby, right? Like, you wouldn't have to share this baby. It would be just hers, and there would be no Christmas where the kid has to go to somebody else's. It's just hers. And she gets so emotional about that. And you can tell how much, you know, having to give up her kid half the time to Randall absolutely kills her. And she tells Lisa about the group photo thing and how Ariana did end up posting a message defending Sheena, but said that they need to talk. And I totally agree. I feel like we really need to get a scene with Ariana and Sheena going, because it seems like a lot of the conversation is happening with them not together. They're happening with others, but not the two of them. And then we have a scene of Tom and Joe going to Sir. So basically, this looks like a see you next Tuesday night. Allie is just sort of sitting there by herself while James is DJing. And it sort of seems like the most awkward looking conversation, because you've got Allie, beautiful, dressed in a very nice little black and white dress. And then you've got Schwartz and Joe show up in their trucker hats and trucker jeans. And it just looks like the most mismatched group of people. And then James comes over and asks if they're friends with benefits, and they just sort of like, Joe and Tom just sort of like throw their hands like over each other's faces and start making like teenager noises and being like, meow, 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 just being like sort of bizarre and not really answering it. And then Sandoval comes in and he joins this weird group hang, and he's wearing like a wife beater. And then Sandoval ends up giving his sunglasses to James, and he's like, hey, they look good on you. And Allie tells the camera that it definitely seems like Sandoval is trying to buy James, and she hopes James doesn't fall for his sad attempt at an apology. But it is something that James does frequently, like, sort of fall for whenever somebody gives him a gift. It's something where he's like, yeah, man, yeah. He just sort of gets really excited about it. So then we get another scene of Tom and Joe, and we see them go for drinks. And Tom says to the camera, you know, like, Joe and I were never in a formal relationship, but last year, maybe he didn't divulge how much they actually cared about each other. I'm like, okay. And then he says that part of it was Katie's resentment towards her. That's interesting. Like, I don't know if he's actually sort of saying that he wouldn't date Joe or didn't actually formally date Joe because he was worried about Katie's reaction. Then we see Joe telling Tom that she had so much fun at Sir last night. She said it was a beautiful night. As I said, it was such an awkward looking event, and it looked extremely produced, but okay, because it's the first time where they're just trying to like throw all of these random people together at See You Next Tuesday and try to make it a thing. Tom says that when he brings her around people, people ask if she's his girlfriend, and she's like, oh, you should just say I'm like your sister. And then he's like, yeah, but a lot of people know that we've slept together. And then just like a child, she's sort of being like, ah, don't say that. Nom, 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 nom. And it's just like, what does she think the premise of this show is? Like, it's definitely about like sex. And like, he's going to talk about that. You know that, right? And then Joe says that they were last intimate a month ago. And she says that she's pretty sure they caught feelings for each other that are still there. But then the camera talks to Tom and he says, oh, it's more platonic now and they have established boundaries and they're friends. So, and then he says, like, I hope she's not mad at me for this. And then they just sort of keep making like robot noises at each other, like, wah, 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 wah. And it's just like, as much as we thought this woman was weird AF, I have never seen two people more well-suited for each other. It's wild. It's almost like Michael Scott and, I forget her name, the one he ended up marrying, but they were just so weird and bizarre together. I don't know. But then she says, like, Tom talks about how, like, in a different timeline, they could have been, like, living happily ever after, which is actually kind of a fucked up thing to say to her because, like, you're not in that timeline, so why even put it in her head? And Joe says, you said you needed 2 to 3 years. So it sounds like they did sort of have some sort of relationship conversation. And then Tom says, yeah, I could maybe compromise on 47. And he's, like, 42 now, right? So I just love how these guys are just such Peter Pans until the fucking end. They will just never commit to a relationship. But we've only gotten little bits of Joe so far, you know, this season, and all we've really got is just sort of her as like a companion to Schwartz and this person who's trying to insert herself into a group and trying to fit in, not quite doing that, but also she clearly has feelings for Tom that aren't reciprocated, and I don't know if that's just gonna come up in the season. I don't know if she's gonna start getting jealous when Tom is going on dates with other people. Like, that I could see being a storyline and going somewhere. Otherwise, I'm not 100% sure why she's here. So then we have the guys all going to this gentleman's dinner, and they're in suits, and they go to this Brazilian steakhouse. And Sandoval's talking about how he hasn't heard from Rachel in a month, and he can't do this anymore, and how she couldn't even send him an email for closure. And he said he doesn't even think he wants another relationship. He just wants female energy in his life. And this is what he says to the camera as he sits there wearing, like, a bright blue women's suit. And it's like, I can't with this man. Then we have the girls going to Allie's for, like, an astrology reading, and I'm not going to go into, like, all of the astrology stuff, just the drama stuff, but Ariana basically says that on March 1st, she wasn't, which is when Scandal broke, she was not financially prepared to move, and the week before, she even emailed her agent and manager and was like, guys, we need to get something going because I'm not in a good place financially. She said she was playing catch-up, and then, like, basically until then has been playing this catch-up, and then in March was on her last $2,000. So she says people think she has millions of dollars, and it's not true, and she's just trying to find the best way financially to move on to the next steps. So I'm just so confused why these people don't have any money. So we had Sheena saying in the last episode that she was completely broke during the pandemic, had no money coming in, but then also Sheena has 3 houses and just bought another one. So confused. Then we have Sandoval saying, like, I had to go on tour. I was broke. I was moving money around, $1,000 here, $1,000 there. But then Sandoval also said, I could buy Ariana out for $3.1 million. Confusing. So why did Ariana only have $2,000 in the bank? Also, does this explain why Ariana wasn't paying the mortgage? Because remember at the beginning of the season, so this would have been like last week of June 2024 when they started filming, Sandoval was like, Ariana hasn't paid the mortgage in like 8 months. Well, they've only been breaking up for 3 months. So are you saying that Ariana wasn't paying for that period of time before? And from what I understood from the after show, it was because Ariana was like, okay, you just keep giving me these random numbers every month. Give me a detailed breakdown and I'll pay you. And he never gave her the detailed breakdown, so she didn't pay him. But now she's also saying she was down to her last $2,000. And I know that their mortgage is more than that. So I am confused as to why these people are not good with their money. I mean, I know reality TV is not stable, but people like Tom, Ariana, Sheena, these were people who have been on the show since pretty much the beginning or the beginning. So I'm a little bit confused as to their financial situations and how they sort of let it get to this place. But it sort of does bring you back to the reality of, you know, these people are not as rich as we think they are. Stars, they're just like us. They're poor just like us. So then they get into an argument about James going to this gentleman's dinner, and Ariana's being like super hard about it, and she's like basically saying like she doesn't know why James would go just to hang out, like he could go hang out with his other friends, and she feels bad if he's like going and it's like an internal thing. And she feeling bad if he's feeling bad internally for having to go. And Lala's like, no, I think people are worried about losing you as friends. And again, I love that Lala is just sort of like flat out just saying how everybody's feeling. And Sheena and Lala are basically sitting there. Sorry, not Lala. Sheena and Allie are basically sitting there like stones, knowing she's right, but they don't want to get involved like at all. And Lala explains that, you know, like time passes, healing starts, and that's where James may be, and he may be changing his mind on Sandoval. And she's like, you're always going to see it differently, Ariana. And Ariana's like, yeah, because I know that Tom's a bad person. And Lala's like, yeah, okay, but like, if James decided he wanted to go hang out with Sandoval, what is your stance on that? And she's like, I don't fuck with that. Ariana says, like, she's not saying that people can't forgive him. She's just saying she's not going to fuck with people that, like, go have dinner with him on a random Tuesday night. And Sheena tells the camera this is exactly what she was worried about with her Ariana, because she doesn't feel like she can talk to her about what's bothering her, and she's just going to keep her mouth shut. And Ariana is giving off the vibe that she is not interested in being open to those kinds of conversations. So then Katie and Lala end up getting in a fight about, like, how Lala's always putting her experiences into things, and Katie's like, you know, Ariana has made her stance clear, just like, Lala, you did about Randall. And Lala's like, yeah, I never said I didn't disagree. Like, I totally understand. She's just saying that she's never, like, you know, and her situation is worse because she lives it every day. And I've just never even seen them talk to each other this way before. So it's just kind of bizarre because these two women were so incredibly close. And Lala tells the cameraman that she knows what it's like to deal with a shitty ex and harboring resentment like Ariana is will eat you alive. And Lala's like, you know, I rode so hard for Ariana. And basically, she gets mad at Katie for ending up bringing the defensive side out of her. And she's mad at Katie for, like, bringing that out. She doesn't like that side coming out of her. So Lala ends up apologizing if she says that if she made it seem like she was making it all about Ariana. But, you know, it just, this fight with Ariana and Lala, you can see that it's more deep-rooted to something else and not just about, like, Lala trying to support Sheena and Lala trying to support people who want to forgive Sandoval and Katie just not being about it. Lala actually mentioned on her podcast this week, she gives a little bit more context here. She says that there was an interview that Katie did earlier this year or maybe late last year where she said that the vibes were off between her and Lala. And she said that, so Lala says that whatever that incident was, which she said she's not going to discuss right now, basically what that was, she and Katie were never really able to get back on track because of that. And so that's why there's still so much tension throughout the summer, because it's really based on something else. So I don't know if we're ever going to find out what that is or get more information, but from the best of my recollection, and I could definitely be wrong, I thought their fight way back then about the vibes being off was about Lala forgetting Katie's birthday. So I don't know why they couldn't have come back from that or have really, you know, dealt with their underlying issues from that if it really was something so trivial, but I'm guessing it was something more than that. So that's all we got from Vanderpump Rules. I definitely think this was a meatier episode. We got a lot more here. You know, overall, I guess I'd say, again, I understand Sheena's feelings. I think her feelings are valid, but at the same time, I think she needs to look at the way Sandoval treats other people and make a determination in terms of whether she wants to be friends with someone who would treat other people like that. And I am here for Lala riding hard for Sheena and for changing her mind and for being open about that. I like her being like, hey, I used to be like this on this issue, and now I want to be like this on this issue. You know, she's not hiding things under the rug. She's like, yeah, I'm flipping flopping and now I'm feeling this way. But I also love that she's supporting Sheena just so incredibly hard. I've just never had a friend fight for me so hard. And so I just really, really love that. The boys I could care less to ever see again. But, you know, I would like to get some more Katie, because I feel like all we're really getting from Katie is just the very little bit of her as like Ariana's main stan. But I want to see more as to what's going on in Katie's life. And in terms of Ariana, it's just so hard, right? Because we're seeing her be cold and we're seeing her have this stance and we're seeing her act a certain way. But again, and we've all said this on many podcasts, it's been only a few months since the scandal broke. It is also extremely unfair for Sheena to put Ariana in these situations where she even has to hear about Sandoval, quite frankly, right? So I don't know. I think we've got a good mid-season trailer ahead of us and we've got some meatier episodes ahead of us. So I really hope that we get some more stuff going on between the cast, but I would really like to see a sit down between Sheena and Ariana before the season's end, because it really seems like there's a lot of built up tension between those two.
How many sandwiches have you made for me?
Okay, so let's get to the VPR after show, which is always way more than the actual show. And this one especially, because they had not just the Vanderpump Rules cast, but also the cast of The Valley. They sort of had them mixed and mashed in between asking questions about Vanderpump Rules, asking questions about cast of The Valley. So it was a pretty interesting episode. We have Lala talking about securing her donor. She said that in December she did her first round of IUI and she's expecting her baby on September 1st. So we actually have a due date, which is so exciting. She said she doesn't know the sex yet. Brittany talks about how so many women are going to look up to her and relate to her, and I totally agree with that as well. Kristen, who's not even friends with Lala right now, says she thinks it was the best decision for Lala because she's not ready to trust a man, and she also has the amazing support of her family. And Lala says that, you know, basically as soon as she was done with her relationship with Randall, she was already thinking about how she would be bringing her next baby into the world. And she says she's basically always been a single parent because he was not really ever very helpful. But she says that even if you have a great relationship and you separate, you have to share the kid, and she doesn't want to do that. It's absolutely gut-wrenching. And she says that with the family support that she has, she doesn't feel like a single parent, which I feel like is absolutely amazing. So then Jax is asked about Katie's rumor about him. So he gets like all fired up and he's like, this is what Katie does. She's like, starts texting and she starts like telling Lala and telling these people. But like, okay, remind me, what was the rumor? So then they flash to Katie saying on this episode of Vanderpump Rules that there's been rumors circulating about him running around town. And she's not like, and then it flashes to Katie like in the after show and she's like, it's not specific to her. Like there was tons of articles out there. Like she's not creating it. And Sheena basically explains that, so it's so funny that there's like this whole cheating story that we weren't like privy to because there's no fucking cameras, right? I need cameras on the cast of Vanderpump Rules and any previous member of Vanderpump Rules on them at all times, because I just love how this group of people, there is just always going something. There is always something going on. There's always drama and we are missing it when we are not around. So basically what happened was there was someone on Reddit who said that Jax had like recently started following a bottle service girl that he had met in Atlantic City and had put the pieces together that he must have cheated on Brittany. So then Jax explains that this was the lady who hired him to whatever this appearance was in Atlantic City. And it's very normal for the person who does the booking to take pictures with like the talent, right? Or with everyone. And then they flash back to Katie who's saying like, I don't know, like when you see these blind items about people you know and you send them to people you know. So then Zach Wickham, so you may recall he is Brittany's best friend from Kentucky and he's also going to be on The Valley. He's also best friends with Kristen and he's like, Jax is 100% not cheating. And he said, Kristen was there and she's like, you know, I'm with them every day. And she would be the first to call him out if she thought so. And we all know that's true. Kristen 100% would. She said she never heard about any of this until this whole like Reddit thing came up. And then they flash over to Janet Caperna, who's saying that she did her little detective work. And, you know, there was a cozy picture of Jax and this woman. It was the bar owner's wife and her husband was there, too. And so, like, even Brittany's there while Janet is talking about this. And it seems like they did all this investigation. It turned out to, like, be nothing. And then Zach says that, you know, if Jax were doing this, somebody would come forward. And that's just not him anymore. And Luke, Kristen's boyfriend, says that Jax just wouldn't risk losing Cruz. Brock says that, like, Jax is sort of living in his, like, prime in his mind, but he actually wouldn't go and, like, fuck shit up. And Jesse Lally, who is married to Michelle Lally on The Valley, says he doesn't see Jax pulling that off because he always gets caught. Sheena mentions that Brittany has all of Jax's passwords and there's nothing there because she looks at it all the time. And Jax says he just loves, you know, Katie just loves misery. She loves others to be miserable. And he said the rumor's a lie, flat out a lie. So it's interesting to hear his entire friend group support him and say he would never do that. He's not that kind of guy anymore when he was that guy. So it's, I don't know, I'm just very surprised to hear this group of people just completely support him in that respect. So basically, then they start talking about Ariana not defending Sheena on Instagram and how Sheena was being called a flip-flopper, how Stassi was right, she's not a good friend, all of that for standing next to Sandoval in the photo. Ariana said she didn't really think about defending Sheena on Instagram, which, you know, fair enough, right? Like, it, you know, your friend is getting hate. It's not necessarily your first thought to be like, I can fix it, or to even think that you even had that power, as I said. And then Lala says that Ariana, you know, was always scrolling on her phone. So she's like, you know, your friend is being dragged on your behalf. You need to say something. She's like, Sheena caught a restraining order on your behalf. But Ariana feels like of the idea that if you ignore annoying things like that. They just sort of go away. But then Katie jumps in. She's like, you know, no one has to jump to your defense if you're acting like a buffoon. And then the producer asks her, like, how Sheena was sort of acting like a buffoon. And she's like, well, it's, like, become a pattern. Like, you know, they go to Life is Beautiful and Sandoval's there. And there was the BravoCon thing where Sheena was in his room. And then she also sort of, like, implies that the way she was standing next to Sandoval was, like, suspect. Katie's like, if I had to stand next to him, I'd be like, rrr. And so she sort of, like, scrunches herself up to imply that she would make herself like as small as possible next to him or not stand next to him or something to that effect. And so for Katie, she's like, it's a pattern. And Sheena's like, everyone's being so mean to me. I don't know why, but she also keeps hanging out with Sandoval on her own accord. And Katie makes a point of like, she wouldn't be putting her arm around Sandoval. So then Sheena said it would have meant a little more to her if the post was Ariana's idea, but she appreciates it. Sheena says that for months leading up to the breakup, she knew that Tom and Ariana weren't happy. And then she actually sat down with her about it and asked her if things were good, because she had heard things about Tom and Raquel. And she said that things were good, things were going so much better. And this is what we had all heard in like the season 10 reunion, right? And Brittany talks about how, I don't know, basically everybody chimes in about where they thought Tom and Ariana were. And Brittany talks about how you can sort of get into that roommate type situation in a marriage or in a long-term relationship, but she feels that, you know, sometimes she feels that way when things aren't going well with her and Jax and they're having hard times and she has to worry, like, is she going to lose everything that she's built? And this, you know, interesting foreshadowing given that they've now separated. Jason Caperna, Janet's husband, talks about how Tom and Ariana, they weren't in the best place, but they didn't seem to be done. They just sort of seem to be where people typically are in like a 10-year-long relationship. Janet actually says that she went out with them like 3 weeks before everything broke, and she said you would have never have known. But then you have Zach Wickham saying that it was a weird dynamic with Tom always out and Ariana always home, and how they never talked about the relationship on Vanderpump Rules, so he said he wasn't surprised because the pattern was there. Jasmine Good is saying, you know, there was always rumors about the relationship, and she had actually worked at Sir. But she would go to music festivals with them, and she thought it was weird how Tom was so touchy with Rachel, and but people were like, no, they're like brother and sister, but she thought it was really weird. And then we just get more of an introduction to the people from the Valley. So I've already kind of gone over this, but we'll just go over some of the additional information they provided. So Danny and Nia are one of the couples. Danny is a voice actor. Nia is married to him. She says they're newest to the group, and she met them 2.5 years ago at a party that Jax and Brittany had. So most interestingly, Nia actually says that she knew Rachel from the pageant world and actually coached her recently. So that was funny. Janet, who I had mentioned, met Sheena back in 2017 at a pool party. And her family is basically a second family to her here in LA. Jason is her husband. He's a lawyer and he used to be good friends with Tom Sandoval, but hasn't spoken to him in 10 months. Jesse and Michelle Lally actually sold Sheena her house in the Valley recently, so that's interesting. And we know, as I mentioned, that Jesse is a luxury real estate agent, and he's married to Michelle, and they have a daughter, Isabella. He and Jax actually work for the same modeling agency, and Jax, like, lived in his living room in New York, like, on the floor or something, which sounds such a, like, Tom and Jax sort of situation. Apparently, according to Jesse, in early 2020, Jax had organized a ski trip, and when Sandoval agreed to come, Jax canceled, and so Jesse ended up connecting most with Sandoval on that trip. Michelle talks about how she and Brittany were both Hooters girls, and they both come from that world. Luke introduces himself as Christian's boyfriend, as we know, and he lives in Colorado most of the time. So I'm actually curious about that. So I know that that's where he's from, but they also have property in the Valley, obviously. So I'm just curious, like, what he has in Colorado, if he works there, if he has homes there. I'm just sort of still confused as to why he's always going back to Colorado. But that's just out of my curiosity. And then, as I mentioned, Zach Wickham is Brittany's friend from Kentucky, and Jasmine Good is from The Bachelor. She worked at Sir. And Schwartz basically says he's close friends with everybody in the group. And Lala, there was sort of one little more scene where they're talking about, like, gifts that Sandoval gives people and sort of what they mean, right? And James says that he basically lost the sunglasses Tom gave him in the episode that night. And Brock says that's like sort of how Sandoval is. He tries to bring you in by orchestrating like these setup gifts. They ask Lala if he's ever given her baby a gift. And she's like, yeah, like he gave a gift to Ocean, not for a birthday, not for anything. But, you know, it's different. You know, you can't do both. You can't like call me dumb for having a baby, but then getting my baby a gift, right? Like, you can't win them over by throwing shiny things at them. So that was it for the after show. But like I said, we got quite a bit there because we had the whole cast of the Valley, but it's so interesting hearing all of their perspectives on each other and how much they differ, right? Anyway, so that's it for Vanderpump Rules.
I take sketch comedy very seriously, so it offends me when people just think that they can just do it.
Alright guys, that's it for the episode this week. I hope you guys enjoyed it. I just want to say that I want to thank you guys so much. I have gained so many additional followers and listeners in the past couple weeks. So things have been going really great with my Instagram account, The Bravo Investigator, as well as this podcast. I take Bravo very seriously. And as I've mentioned before, the community has always been so amazing to me since I've entered it back in August. I loved meeting all the Bravo content creators that I've met to date, as well as all of the fans. That being said, over the past couple of weeks, I have gotten quite a bit of hate, and it is sort of the first time I've experienced that before. As I said, like, it's been so positive to meet everyone and to interact with people online, and obviously, it's no one is a stranger to getting hate online, but I was, right? So it was sort of my first time experiencing that. I think I've made the decision, which is probably the healthiest for my mental health, to probably not engage in the comments that much, because I think that that's just sort of where the vitriol lies, and sometimes it can just become too much. So if I don't respond to you in the comments, you know, don't take it personally. I'm just trying to keep myself out of it, I guess, a bit for my mental health. But please don't hesitate to DM me on Instagram at The Bravo Investigator or at I Take Bravo Very Seriously if you have any questions or you just want to chat about the show. I'm happy to do that. And I would love to hear from you guys more, you know? Tell me what you want to change. Tell me what you want different. I would love some feedback. I really would, you guys. But if you liked this episode, you can listen to it on Apple Podcasts or on Amazon, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also subscribe to my YouTube channel at I Take Bravo Very Seriously, where I have all the episodes. And I've also started putting up some other things. I included the mid-season trailer of Vanderpump Rules up there, so maybe I'll start attending to my YouTube a little bit more. As I mentioned, you can follow me on Instagram at The Bravo Investigator and at I Take Bravo Very Seriously. You can also follow me on TikTok for now, I guess, because I hear TikTok is going away, but for now you can follow me on TikTok at The Bravo Investigator. And if you liked the episode, please, 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 guys, leave a 5-star review. Please rate, review, and subscribe. It's so important. It helps the show grow. And until next time, thanks guys, and please keep taking Bravo very seriously.